Podcasting 2.0 for June 25th, 2021, episode 43. What are they building? Oh yeah, that question and many more shall be answered today during our board meeting of Podcasting 2.0. It's open source. Everybody's welcome. Come on in. The door is wide open. Chairs are ready for you as we figure out, discuss, and prognosticize, whatever that means, about podcastindex.org and everything that goes on at podcastindex.social. I'm Adam Curry in Austin, Texas, and in Alabama, the man who always delivers five nines uptime, my friend on the other end, Dave Jones.
Did you say prognosticas?
Yeah, something like that. Okay. It just came out like, well, I don't know what I said. Hey, Dave.
What up? What up, bro?
Yeah, what up, bro? We have almost not spoken this week, I think.
I know, it's kind of weird.
Yeah, well, it's I am really in the middle of boxes now, finally, in the studio. As, let me see, Monday we leave. We go to the new casa.
It's imminent. It's imminent.
What do you mean imminent?
Your move.
Oh no,
it's right around the corner now.
Oh, it's happening. Yes, it's happening. But man, I thought still we were pretty much minimalist. But if we look at and Tina is, if we look at Adam's stuff, which Tina collectively calls your wires.
I mean, and everything's a wire.
Everything has a wire attached to it. You know, like I might as well have the wire stuck into the device rather than go to some wire box and have to find it.
There was some study done. I think I saw it maybe a year ago, and it was, I don't know where it was. I don't remember the details, but all I remember was they took a bunch of wires and left them alone, and they would tangle themselves.
No.
Like that was the whole study, was to see it, like, and that the conclusion was wires will always self tangle. It was like some sort of chaos theory experiment.
It kind of makes sense, I guess. They are alive. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They have a life of their own. Yeah, some of them walk away. You can't find it. You know where you put it, and it just walks away. I've got an inordinate amount of ham radio gear.
Ham radio gearheads, man. You can't have just one of something.
Oh, no. I've got 2-meter rigs. I've got my first, all band rig, which is 100-watt. I think is it a Yaesu?
It's a brick.
Yeah. It's a brick. It weighs 30 pounds. And I've got antenna tuners and wires and, oh, my God. That's just nuts.
You don't have time for much ham radio these days, do you?
I haven't had time. But, I mean, the pandemic would have been perfect. But we started doing podcasting 2.0. And we'd only really just moved into this house 2 years ago. And even though I had a mast put in the back, not a full-on pylon mast, but something I could easily attach something else to, I never strung up any antenna. Never got to it.
Well, you're actually saving the world now instead of pretending to save the world. So that's good.
I haven't played that in such a long time. Hold on. Hams will save the world. Yes, we need to listen to the whole thing. Bruce Perens, everybody.
Now here we have ham radio, guys. Ham radio is the public service network of last resort. When the apocalypse comes, we're the guys who are going to save the world, right?
Right? Yeah. Right? Yeah, pandemic hit, flip on the 2-meter band. All I got is one guy going, mic test. Stupid hams.
CQ.
Yeah, not a lot of CQing going on the local repeaters. Yeah. So before we get started, I feel kind of bad about our last show. I was bitching about my move, and you know, and that Martin had been Martin had been dragged down into, you know, he also bought a house. He proposed to his fiance. Basically he's like, we've lost him. He's gone. We'll never see him again.
You made him feel so bad about himself that he open sourced his software and hit the deck.
Well, I'm going to make,
I'm out.
So not only did he release an upgrade right after we released the show, which is fantastic. Then he went ahead and he open sourced the whole thing. And we have a little present for him.
You know, what's really hot? Open source. Send your pull request now.
pull request.
Send your pull request now.
Oh, that's so bad.
Dame Jennifer, heroine of podcasting 2.0.
I mean, that just brings back every memory of a 1-800 number ever.
Yes.
Do people even remember? I mean, that's not even a thing anymore, I don't think.
It is in Europe. In Europe, it still is. They still got a lot of phone sex line. Yeah, they advertise it on TV after 1 a.m. Yeah, they got the softcore kind of video, and then the numbers call me.
Yeah.
Are you alone, baby? Yeah. I got to play that one more time, just for the effect for myself. Yeah.
You know what's really hot? Open source. Send your pull request now.
Oh my God.
Well,
that one gets me.
Since we're doing it, we might as well remind everybody this is a podcasting 2.0 compliant podcast. We expect you're listening to this on a compatible podcast app. If not, go to newpodcastapps.com.
Here's your cue to boost. You know you want to.
All right, sexiest nerd show in the universe here.
It is. It's the only redemption this show has is those jingles.
Now,
otherwise, it would be mega nerd.
When someone like a Martin open sources his whole project, mm-hmm. what does that say? As a developer, and we should ask him, obviously, but it's more fun to talk behind his back. What brings you to that point as a developer, do you think?
Personally, I think you could say one of two things. You could say some business reason. So you've decided that the business model you had for your product is not going to materialize the way you thought it would, and you would be better off by open sourcing it so that you can build a community around it. So that would be like the Mozilla model.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's say, well, okay, we're going to change gears here. We're going to change direction. We're going to go from, hey, we're going to compete. We want to be able to people to buy our web browser. And now we're going to flip over to building an open source community around the browser and switch models.
Hmm.
I think you could do it that way. Or on a smaller scale, you can, I think somebody like, well, us or Martin or Guilherme or Castapod, whoever, you sort of go into it with the idea that eventually you probably are going to do it. I don't know if Martin thought that way, but I feel like he probably did. It's not something that you just wake up one day and say, oh, I'm going to throw this up on GitHub. Like, you don't just do that. You typically probably had some inkling already that it was not going to be a closed system. And so you're already sort of mentally prepared to make that switch. He may say I'm totally wrong, but those are the two ways that I come to it. Usually, like typically I will, if I know ahead of time, I'm like, I'm never going to open source this, or I eventually am. Because if you go into it with the idea that you're never going to open source it, if you think it's going to be closed, just a silo, or not a silo, but a proprietary product forever, you make decisions that really come back to bite you in the rear later.
Oh,
when you go to, you have to do a lot of cleanup. A lot.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, things like hard coding stuff in there, in the code.
Yeah, that no one can figure out later.
Yeah, well, and things like configuration files, mm-hmm. how to look, where you put certain parameters and
right.
in like how do you treat the environment, all these sorts of things, they will come back to haunt you later on if you don't sort of think a little bit in that direction up front. So, I mean, it's hard enough to clean up the code. And the reason I haven't released the API code as open source is, you know, that was a lot of that was forklifted out of Freedom Controller, at least on the aggregator side. Mm-hmm. And then I had this other project that I had done that was partially open source where I got the API part or the REST part. And so I merged those two together. So they were both previously open sourced. And even them both being open sourced before, it's still going to be a lot of cleanup to have to go through and do it.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, you got to look for stuff because if you roll it out there, you'll end up getting things like the dreaded GitHub notice email that says, hey, just a heads up, you ha- have hard-coded S3 credentials in your, in your source file.
Oh, they scan for that?
Yeah, they do, because it's, it happens so often. It's easy to forget.
Wow.
You put something in here for testing, you know, over here, and then you just left it.
Just throw it in there. Oh, man. Yeah. Well, it's kind of interesting the way you characterized it in the very beginning as we just started the show, because for me, it did have a little bit of a vibe of, all right, here it is. I'm just open sourcing this thing. I got stuff to do. I don't know. And I'm just telling you my first impression. It's based on nothing. It was just like, I think it's good. I don't know.
I think sometimes you look at your own project and you say, I'm struggling to find the time to put into it that I want.
That's what I think. Yeah. Okay. That sounds about right. Yeah.
It's not like you're giving up on it, but you're hoping that, somebody else can take it further and learn from it. You're just wanting to give back, so to speak, rather than sitting on this.
I think it's a fantastic gift. I mean, holy crap.
Yeah. 100%. That's a huge deal, because he's implemented so many 2.0 features already.
Yeah.
And Facebook could definitely pick up some of that stuff and learn from it. Because I'm serious. They're all React. They invented React, and all his stuff's done in React, and he's a great programmer. They could take some of his like transcript stuff. They could pull it right out of his code and tweak it and shove it right into Facebook.
I sure hope Facebook considers using the namespace. I mean, they're starting from scratch. Why would they not? I mean, what penalty is there besides, you know, obviously you have to code in the features, but I think the way I view Podfriend and CurioCaster and other web apps in general, it's really a nice experience desktop.
Yeah.
Especially with chapters and that stuff. It really comes to life.
When I was thinking about Facebook the other day, I think it was last night, I was listening to Podland, and Cridlin actually changed my mind a little bit on Facebook on their entry into the game, because he was saying that they probably are going to be targeting new people that have never listened to podcasts before, like boomers, you know, that group, and non-technical boomer age people that probably just don't know anything about podcasts. They don't listen to them. Mm. And I can see that. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. If that's the case, that brings in a whole lot more listeners to the ecosystem.
Yeah, I'm good with that. It is kind of interesting to see how, and I'm going to say it again, you cannot monetize the network. And this is not going to work for Apple. It's not going to work for Spotify. And now Amazon has purchased, Art19?
Oh, yeah. I've got...
And Art19, they do hosting, right?
Yeah, I think at least at some point in time, they may still do it. They hosted some of the New York Times podcasts.
We'll see how open they all want to be. Apple has clearly given up. They just don't. Well, they just don't care.
Barletta said he posted the thing the other day and said, "Well, this morning about the Art19 thing." Mm-hmm. He said, "Will this drive Apple and Google to acquire hosting companies?" I don't think
no way. No, that's a pipe dream. Nope. In fact,
Apple's already got a host.
They're already hosting it. What it's going to do is they're going to drive more people towards their subscription content and away from whatever. The iTunes charts just won't matter that much, I don't think.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. And Google just doesn't care. Podcasts are just a side gig for them. They don't. Yeah. I mean, this is the typical thing with Google. They build it, and then they forget about it, and it just sits there and runs.
No, but when I say you can't monetize the network, you really have to understand the media landscape, how that's changed. This is why I don't believe in podcast discovery. This is not like a YouTube. Mm-hmm. It's not like anything else. It's truly decentralized by nature. So even the idea of a top 10 list is crazy. Makes no sense. It just doesn't. So yeah. Award shows, all these things, and there's a lot of money being, because I would say 90% of pod news is about content stuff, and to me it's like everyone's look. It's the business. It's just like record business. Everyone's looking for a hit. You get one hit, and you can finance 10 other shows, and that's the business. And you'll be doing that for a long time. And it it's going to be harder and harder to get a hit, because what is a hit? When you have 4 million advertised podcasts, of which 600,000 are real, that's still, you know, you're just not going to get the type of numbers you used to get. This whole idea, the whole notion of how advertising is done, everything is based on the old medium, right down to the CPM. You know, the cost per thousand, but that's not appropriate anymore. And maybe advertising itself is not going to be appropriate because of the niche audiences, which will keep things sustainable. But even television is now moving to apps, and it may be on the Roku, but really it's just online. Everyone's going to be streaming. Everyone's going to be a quote unquote podcast. That's just what it's going to be. And I'll compete with No Agenda will compete with Rachel Maddow. Seriously, that's where it's going. That's where it's going towards. No one can afford the infrastructure anymore, trying to compete for a 200,000 listeners during a cable news show afternoon. No, or viewers.
And the reason I was laughing is because it's not really a competition.
Thank you. We know Rachel would trounce me. We all know that.
Sure. Okay. Well, the other thing he said was what will be the first stack. What will be the first stack to offer a Spotify SAI competitor, a streaming ad insertion competitor? I would say if anybody out of that, it may be Amazon, but that is such a big question mark because I think the whole thing here is nobody knows if any of this stuff even makes money yet. Like, I'm talking about decent money enough to make it worth it. I mean, Spotify has spent hundreds of millions of dollars buying all this gear and buying all these companies and all this stuff. And nobody knows if it's even going to pay off. So you're taking a huge risk.
I look at it this way. 85% of all internet advertising goes to two companies. It goes to Google and it goes to Facebook. Neither of these have even shown any type of advertising strategy for podcasts. None. Because you think they haven't looked at it? You think that they didn't see, you know, all the noise and think, oh, we can go and grab that industry real easy? I'm pretty sure they looked at it and went, we can't sell ads on this.
Yeah.
For a whole bunch of reasons, one of which is programmatic. You just can't guarantee a brand safe environment. So you're always going to be limited by brands that will take a risk.
Well, that tells me, okay, that's a perfect opportunity to talk about the Call Her Daddy podcast.
Yes. What did she get? $60 million reported?
$60 million. Mm-hmm. Yeah, $60 million, which is $40 million less than her male counterpart. Which
it's totally misogynist. Yep, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Spotify, bunch of dicks. Mm-hmm.
That's right. Literally. I was going to mock this podcast. I wanted to get ISOs from it. Mm-hmm. I wanted to get clips from it. It's unlistenable. It's the biggest steaming pile of garbage I've ever tried to listen to.
And you brought a clip.
I meant it. This is the first. This is the intro. That's how far I got. Okay. Now, so I want you to play as much of this as you can stomach, and then I want to make a point about it.
Hello, Daddy Gang. Before we get into this episode, I want to remind you that on July 21st, the only place that you will be able to listen to this podcast, Call Her Daddy, is on Spotify. So if you are someone that doesn't listen on Spotify right now, take a minute, download the Spotify app. If you already have it, that's great. Go on to Spotify, type in Call Her Daddy, and press the follow button. That's the same as subscribe. Follow, turn on notifications, and then moving forward every single Wednesday, that is where you will listen to your favorite fucking podcast. That is where you will masturbate, and that is where you will feel happy, okay? Only on Spotify, and let me be very clear. It is free. It's free. It's free. I don't know why. If you thought you had to pay for it, you don't. It's free. It's free. It's free. You do not need premium. You don't need shit. You just need the app, and you can listen to Call Her Daddy. Join the fucking orgy, bitches. Spotify, starting July 21st, is the only place you can listen to this podcast. Right now, I'm having it be everywhere so you guys can slowly transition. Again, no dad left behind. Go to Spotify, press follow, and let's begin the best year of the Daddy Gang.
Well, this is a a weird deja vu for me. When we started Pod Show, later Mevio, we had a stable of talent. And we had we did contracts with our version of the Rogan and Sophia with an F contracts. Only we set them up with an LLC, showed them how to run the business. We helped them with the books, with some tax advice. They had to get their own CPAs. Some did not, against our advice. Shares in the company. I mean, we really tried to bring them in, and I made the same basic decisions. We had. Our version was Madge Weinstein, the bloated lesbian, who was still Madge may still listen to the show. Madge is a Bitcoiner.
She's a big No Agenda listener, right?
I hope so. Yeah. She was. I hope she still is. I don't think we agree on everything, the bloated lesbian and I, but I think I consider that to be a very good acquaintance and had fun working with her. We had Don and Drew. We had Marcus Couch, with the metal music, and we did all this stuff. Everything was done, and even investors like, oh yeah, they even got this character, this Madge Weinstein. Excuse me, Madge Weinstein's real, not a character. Okay, and it was fun and it was funky, but it really didn't bring people in the door. You still had this gradual, slow rise over time. And while that's slow, you notice that you really can't get the big advertisers because of, it turns out investors think, the bloated lesbian's hilarious, BMW, not so. And so then, and then at a certain point we're doing podcasts where we're unboxing stuff. I'm like, okay, I'm done. So now we're just, taking money from a car company or motorcycle company. And unboxing. Now, it was a great unboxing. The crate popped open like David Copperfield. The whole thing was cool. But it was basically an infomercial. I just saw, then you get the infighting. I'm not promoted. Why do I not have the ads? Now, it's probably different, but so we have now two people who have big salaries. The others are getting a lot less, no doubt. That by itself creates animosity within the ranks.
Okay, so you had the Obamas that had exclusives.
Mm-hmm.
I know some people, I know James said that they told him that it was a windowing thing and it was timed and it was always going to release. Who knows? But those two things have been spun out and they're now non-exclusives anymore.
Mm-hmm.
The exclusives you have at Spotify are now Rogan. Which, I'm just going to lay this out literally. It's Rogan, who is a guy who interviews people while he's hammered. You've got Just Break Up, which is basically the podcast equivalent of Us Weekly. You have Call Her Daddy, which you just experienced. And that is only, I'm serious. I got 20 minutes into it and I was just like, I can't handle this show anymore. It's the worst basement level tripe I've ever heard.
So, but that's subjective. And you know me, it's like, I don't care. I really don't. Even quality doesn't matter to me. For my own stuff, it does. But I think if there's an audience, there's an audience. Now, is it worth $60 million? No, of course not. Very unlikely.
But the point I'm trying to make though is that that's their stable now. That's their lineup. Of their big dog podcast that they've got.
No, that's their marketing budget. They don't give a shit about these people.
Oh no. That's what I'm saying. They don't. But what they're doing is they're building their brand
On this.
They're building their brand around this
weed and the F word.
Exactly. They're building it around a very targeted. Here's the point. That's probably the only stable content they can maintain in the silo that makes money.
Ah, yes, very good. That's a good point.
Because you get brand safety is boring, So you have to go extreme. You have to have these edgy shows like this, and in order to maintain their exclusivity. Because they're the only ones whose followers are dedicated enough to follow them to a new app. And you saw it. It's like, oh, I've got to remind you, free, free, free. You know, it's free, it's free, it's free. She said that like 10 times. And we know from the Just Break Up podcast when it went exclusive and they did their little, hey, we're going to Spotify intros for 2 months leading up to it. You know, remember that they had sort of said that, hey, the Spotify's onboarding team told us we need to emphasize that the app is free. You know, they said that that was part of the gig, that they you got to tell your audience it's free, it's free, it's free. And so they have now, in my mind, they have now shrunk to the lowest common denominator here. They're going to get cheap audiences that will only come if it's free and using bargain basement content.
There's an interesting analog I read yesterday about between podcasting and Bitcoin. And I think it was the CoinDesk update, NLW, everybody. And he said what he found to be kind of sad, and he reports on you know, macro markets, but Bitcoin specifically, you know, this kind of stuff. He says Bitcoin is sadly moving from Gonzo, referring to Max Kaiser, to Goldman Sachs, referring to you know, the big June 21st meeting or whatever with Elon and Jack Dorsey and Cathie Woods, and everyone's getting together and they're corporatizing. And so that idea from Gonzo to Goldman Sachs, and I think it's a trap, and podcasting definitely fell into it. The nature of Bitcoin will not allow it to be Goldman Sachsified. It can't actually happen. With podcasting, the entire industry, and including most of the OG people that I know, became corporate and comfortably corporate. And you know, and with corporate comes the whole infrastructure. That's why you have meaningless award shows. I mean, I don't want to demean people celebrating creative content, but come on, we all know how it works. We know who's invited. We know who the sponsors are. I mean, the whole thing. Everything is based around everybody trying to get a buck off of some advertiser. Even if you're just reporting on it, you're taking advertising money from the people you're reporting on. I mean, that's what the whole mm-hmm. industry is. Whereas yeah. to me, podcasting is, you got something to say, you say it, if people start to show up, you start to nurture that, you build your tribe, you start to cross over, other people hear you. I think it's still very valid to go on each other's podcasts. I think that's one of the strongest, most effective things any podcaster can do, is if it's appropriate for your format. But having another podcaster on in your genre as a guest, or as someone as a guest who also has a podcast, is very powerful. That's like the power of blog rolling. You know, and
go ahead.
No, please.
Speaking of Dave Jackson, your interview with him was fantastic.
It was so much fun to do that, and you know, and I realized, yeah, you know, it all came back. It was very comfortable speaking with Dave because we've talked a lot over the years.
Yeah, and that guy's a good interviewer.
He is, and he also knows the questions to ask. He knows what he knows his audience very well. Mm-hmm. And I love that he just implements stuff. It's like, okay, I'm good. I'm going to do this, and yeah. He's up and running, right? Everything's working now, I think. I've boosted him, I know it works, mm-hmm. yeah, from my end yep. at least, yeah.
No, he's up and running, yeah. And I love how he, I'd never heard his show before. So I love how, except when I tested the other day, so I love how he took, like, he had you as a guest, and then he said, listen to me do this, and here's why I made these decisions on where I placed the ad, on here's how I was able to sweeten the deal to make this guest come on. I did some research beforehand. I know he doesn't like this. I know he does like to like this. And like, he just went through the whole process of how to get a guest on, how to interview him. It was mm-hmm. it was top notch, man. Maybe he does that all the time, and I'm just not a, you know, listener of his show, and I don't know. But that was high quality stuff. And he gave me the ability to get two very nice ISOs off of him.
ISOs, okay. We playing these now, so
no, let's save them to the industry. Okay.
Well, and so this is just the way the media landscape is, and I think a lot of people aren't seeing the forest for the trees. Mm-hmm. Everything is going down. All the television numbers. You know, Hollywood is gone. It's gone. It's now streaming app companies. And they're going to have their own challenges. None of them is profitable. Well, Peacock in context of NBC Comcast. But, you know, there's a lot that still has to be built up and understood about how audiences are interacting. And you know, if I just look at my own podcast, I know that there's people who listen on a variety of apps. I know there's people who listen right in a web browser. I mean, there's so, it's all over the place, but it's a community. It's our community. And it's never going to be, I just think the days of 100 million people listening to one person are gone forever. That's the internet did that to us. That was kind of the point, but we're still somehow struggling to cobble it all together and say, look, we have a $1 billion industry. Bullshit. Everyone has little pieces of it. And those little pieces, I think you're right, will never add up to enough to make it viable for any large corporation to put a lot of time and resources into it. I see this with noagendasocial.com, the Mastodon server. So we get up to like 20,000 members and shit starts to creak. And it's not the technology. It's the amount of user support. It's the amount of hand-holding. I don't think the podcasting companies that are in business today, I don't think they should really want to be too big. It's, you know, you have to spend, I don't know their business exactly, but I can only imagine how much extra cost they've gotten just from having to take support calls over misunderstanding why Apple isn't updating. Yeah. You know, all of this stuff. And, you know, so we locked down our Mastodon at 20,000, said, look, you can federate and you can still follow us and join in, but we just can't do it. And it's not about money. You can never send in enough to, I mean, do you know how many people report stuff and have problems logging in and lost their two-factor authentication? No, I don't have to ask you. You know exactly what it is.
Oh, yeah.
With a fraction of that just on Podcast Index.
That makes me think that the Facebook thing, they may be pretty strategic in what they're doing because it is so tribal in the way they're doing it with that. You know, I don't like it. I mean, I don't like the whole idea of centralized social media, but I mean, I hate that concept, but regardless of my own personal sensibilities about it, it may be a good idea for them to actually get in that game because they're already set up with sort of, what do you call them? Siloed communities, tribes, mm-hmm. whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever
you want to say. Groups, Facebook groups, I guess.
Yeah. And that kind of thing. Maybe it's a good entry point for them.
If that's how they're building it. And I haven't seen it. I don't have Facebook anymore. I don't care. Other in this context, if they're doing it in a group setting where, you know, that's kind of your tribe is a good enough word. They could probably be successful with that. But again, it's a silo. You know, what we want, just to reiterate, we want to have comments, at the bare minimum, comments that work between apps. If we do that, game over. Game over. Everyone will go for that. What's the status of the Matrix server idea? Did we ever follow through on that?
Well, I'm gonna do that hopefully this weekend.
Because what I've seen is when you set something up, shit starts to happen.
Yeah, and I felt that too. You know, people need the okay to move ahead. And I can understand that.
Of course.
Because you need, because what we're all sort of a hive mind here and we're trying to move forward together. And so it really needs, somebody needs to say, okay, here, I'm going to do this. It doesn't always have to be me. It's, you know, other people do stuff. But if somebody throws it out there and says, okay, I'm going to take the ball and run with this thing, then everybody sort of squirrel and goes in that direction. And that's a good thing. So I think I need to fire that up because Roy over at Breeze, I pinged him and I was like, hey, have you done anything with Matrix? And he said, no, not yet. And I said, well, I think I'm going to go ahead and fire up a server.
Oh, good.
Let's just
play
with something.
Good. I'm sure he was on board with that.
Yeah. He said, rock on. Let's do it. Before I get off that, play Facebook podcast conspiracy.
Okay.
So listeners will be able to send Facebook virtual currency. This was interesting. They have a virtual currency stars to creators in live audio rooms. This is kind of Adam talking to you here. Zuckerberg said the company will not take a cut on the creator revenue until 2023. So there's some kind of virtual currency called Stars. On Podcast 2.0, you send what? Sats. Right? Sats.
Yeah.
This is the same letters. With an R.
It is.
Same letters with an R. R stands for ripoff, by the way, just a point of reference. So this is Stars. If you kind of twist around the letters, it's Sats. Same thing that Curry's working on, don't you think?
What was Dvorak's answer?
He's like, yeah.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, I think it's funny. Stars has been around for a while. That's their little point system.
But so this whole idea of collectively moving in a direction, my biggest gripe this week is this was the week for everybody to pull out their various versions on social media of, well, nobody's implemented it yet, so we're not going to do it. That.
Oh, argument, yeah. I saw a couple of these. Yeah. Yeah. That's defeatist. That's dumb.
It's okay. So Simplecast responded basically with exactly the same wording to Stephen B. and to Dreb Scott, who both pinged them, asking them to support a certain Podcasting 2.0 namespace feature. And they replied with this pretty much exact wording. We do not currently support Podcasting 2.0 namespace, mainly because it has yet to be adopted by any of the major listening apps. Number one, that's not true.
No, it's completely untrue. Overcast is in the group.
Well, Overcast is doing implementation now, but
Podcast Addict,
mm-hmm. which has almost the same amount of market share as Overcast, Xavier has already implemented about four of these features.
Yeah.
And so that's on the face of it, it's not even true. But more importantly, that's not how any of this ever gets done. Like nobody waits for another person to implement something before they implement something, or nothing ever gets done, because that is circular reasoning. And if everybody waited for everybody else to do things before they did things, then nobody would do anything. And we'd all just sit here and stare at each other. Mm. And so the idea is the way open, decentralized processes work, which RSS is the granddaddy of, is in the club. The way that these things move forward is that somebody has a good idea. They write up the spec and the framework for it. They do some reference implementations to show how it works and to show, the benefits of it. And then they evangelize it and they convince other people that it's good enough that they should spend their developer time getting on board with it as well.
What I mean, the irksome part of that answer is, so first of all, here's two of your customers, Steven and who was the other one?
Dreb
Scott. Two of your customers who you're saying no to, okay, that's a business decision. But the thing that irks me is none of the big apps have implemented it. Okay. So, and by the way, I respect that. And I know a lot of time goes into doing new releases and features, et cetera. But that answer shows me that you just want people to ride by you. And that's IBM saying, okay, cute that little personal computer. That'll never be anything. That's what that sounds like to me.
I think it's indicative of a bigger issue where people have forgotten where the stuff that we have came from. And it's the same. You see this in art and jingles and things like that, which would, is an art form. You see this in all of these creative works that appear on the internet. The internet has cheapened things to the point where I think a lot of people don't consider that they were actually created by human beings. Like, you can browse the internet for, a couple of hours, and you're seeing thousands and thousands of pieces of art, or artwork that even small little snippets of web pages that have been stitched together to make something look beautiful, sounds, video, pieces of video. You're seeing all of this content, and every single bit of that content, every bit of it was created by a human being in some shape, form, or fashion. And we have been desensitized to that, to the standpoint, to the point where we think that this stuff just sort of spontaneously generates. It just happens. Like the internet, like it's evolution, you know, like, well, it's the internet just creates this crap for us. But that's not what happens. The way industries move forward and advance is by people doing things. We do something over here, then an app does something over there, then a hosting company does something over there, and we all connect, we interconnect. Remember the first law of rules for standard makers? Interop is all that matters. We all interop together, and then an advancement takes place, and the industry moves forward one notch. That's how it happens. It doesn't happen through everybody sitting back and looking at two big corporations and saying, man, I wish they would do something. Nothing is ever going to happen that way. It's not. And the hosting companies have adopted podcasting, the podcast namespace, those hosting companies are using it today as a selling advantage to get more customers.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Other hosts need to understand that. If you're waiting,
all of a sudden you're going to wake up and people are leaving and you're going to be behind the eight ball.
Yeah, you're going to get your ass kicked.
Yeah.
I mean, that whole argument is complete. It shows a broader, it tells me that the podcast industry is a group of people that have been conditioned to think of themselves as observers and not participants.
And subjected to other forces, to them and they.
They are people, the podcast industry, I'm talking about the people in the podcast industry, because it's all made of people. The people in the podcast industry look at themselves as people that things happen to instead of people that go and do things themselves.
Wow. It's interesting in that context that coming out of France, we got Castapod. You'd expect the socialists to be the laziest people ever, but they're actually on
the, they're on the game.
I'm way ahead of the game, I'd say. Exactly. Yeah. Speaking of, any progress? I know you got a lot on your plate, but any progress on our install?
Well, I went to import the feed, and it broke. Everything bombed out. There's something wrong. And so Ben's looking at it. He said he's gonna let me know.
That's why it's beta. That's cool.
Mm-hmm. No, it's alpha. That's what it says. No, so it's like something
French.
Alpha.
It's beta, but that's why in France that's alpha. So.
Nice.
Oh, I heard something on I think it was Pod News that Stacey from NPR is going to anchor.
Yeah, she had actually told me that in an email a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, well, thanks for letting me know.
Well, I didn't know if I was supposed to say anything. So,
okay.
Because I'd emailed her about something and she said, well, you know, I'm actually leaving. But she's going to Acast, which is good. That's good for Acast.
Well, doesn't that mean that she can nudge them about a couple of things?
Yeah, I hope so.
That would be great.
Because Acast is giving us the cold shoulder too. So they need to stay. We got somebody on the inside.
Yeah. Yeah. We got a shill.
The shill. Yeah. We got a shill
on the inside. Okay.
Spook.
Now
podcasting 2.0 spook.
Now I have a question. For about a week now, I've been trying to understand what's going on. Could you please explain to me what the heck are Brian of London and Alex Gates building? What are they doing? And why are they vomiting it on my feed all day long? What is happening? What is the and it looks like, I mean, just for, it's, so it looks like something with Podping. It looks like something that is part of the structure of Hive. And Brian is championing everything and fixing stuff on the fly with baling wire and chewing gum. And then Alex Gates looks at it and says, dude, that's baling wire and chewing gum. Let me add some paper clips. and then they wrap it up with some gaffer tape, and then they argue about it. What's going on?
That's, yeah. Why do you need me to explain it? You just explained it to me.
Well, and then all of a sudden, like, we need a server. Like, hold on a second. What's going on?
we need a $150 a month server. Like, oh, wait. No, it's, yeah, you pretty much summed it up. So what happened last week, or last weekend, I think it was maybe Saturday of last weekend, Podping broke. And so what happened was, so Podping consists of two main parts on the centralized part of it. There's a web front end that accepts HTTP requests. And then there's the Hive writer, which takes the URLs that come in and writes them onto the Hive blockchain.
Okay, got it.
And so there's the two pieces are interconnected through a socket. And so it's called a ZMQ or zero MQ socket.
Mm-hmm.
I think it stands for zero managed queue or something. So it's a special type of socket where so Blueberry would send a URL notification to Podping. Podping gets it, sends it over the socket to the Hive writer. And typically what happens is if the Hive writer is alive and responding, then the front end will take the URL and discard it from the queue. So it just forgets it. It's like, okay, I handed it off to the Hive writer. Hive writer, it's your baby now, your responsibility. I'm done. Mm-hmm. And so it takes it out of the queue. What was happening last Saturday was that the Hive writer started throwing some weird error. And it was like, the user that you're posting with does not have posting authority.
You need Hive power.
Hive
widgets. Hive oats.
Oats. You've exhausted your Hive oats, and you're now up the creek. Like you can't do anything.
You can't post. Okay.
You can't post. Yeah. And it had been doing this for like 6 hours.
Oops.
And normally what you would expect would be that the front end would be saying, okay, well, nothing, you know, it's not working. So I'm hanging on to these. I'm going to keep trying.
Oh, it was going poof, 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 poof. Delete.
Just blowing away. Oh yeah. It was smoking every one of them. And because the Hive writer only hands back okay, it doesn't actually hand back an error message. And so this has been the discussion since then is number one, why did it happen in the first place? That's what Brian has been on. And Brian was very concerned about this thing.
Well,
and
sure.
Rightly so. And so he's been on a mission to try to figure out, talking to Hive developers, why it happened, and then how to finish re-engineering the Hive writer so that it is resilient to this thing. There's a couple ways you could think that this would go. You could say, well, the Hive writer, if it fails to write a URL to the blockchain,
cache it.
It should respond and tell the front end,
right?
Okay,
yeah.
I error. Failed.
Mm-hmm.
Error. I personally don't like that. To me, each piece of the puzzle needs to be completely independent and autonomous where it can handle its own failures.
Right. So it should maybe report back something, but I got it. I've saved it as soon as I get my oats back, my oat power.
That's right.
As soon as I eat my Wheaties, then I can, then I'll post it.
Right. So you have to think, what do I want when the front end hands off a URL to the Hive writer?
Right.
What do you want the response to mean? Does it, when you say, when the, if the response is okay, does that mean, okay, I got it? Or does that mean, okay, I did with it what I wanted to do with it?
No, everyone knows what it should always be abort, retry, fail.
Enhance, zoom, rotate. Yeah. It should just respond back. No more oat milk or whatever. So it's like, what do you want it to do? Do you want that that message to indicate, I failed to do my part, or I failed or something went wrong with you trying to do your part.
Right.
And I think personally, my feeling is that okay or error message in the handoff should just mean, okay, I got it. I got what you sent me, because that's all that the front end is responsible for anyway, is I'm just going to have to get this information to you. Now, what you do with it and ultimately what happens to it after that, I don't want to be responsible for. So that's what Brian's trying to figure out.
Do we know, and that may actually belong on a GitHub, that drawn out technical conversation. I really want to just mute, but I don't. I'm missing other stuff. You know, it's just too much. Like and I don't want to complain because I thought about, it's what it is. It's organic. We'll see what happens. But do we know the actual cause of the failure? Do we know what the oats issue was?
Brian says that he knows what it was, but I'm not sure that me or Alex understand what, because he hasn't translated it into non-Hive yet. We don't understand exactly what that means.
Okay.
And he's being responsible in the, and trying to figure out, okay, I just want to make sure this thing never happens again.
Sure.
And, so my recommendation was, okay, if the failures happen on the posting side, that's fine. The way that you need to combat that is through persistence. So and the way this was all developed was I wrote the front end and Brian wrote the back end, and then Alex gave him a lot of help to help him structure his Python, and he's Dockerizing it and stuff. Mm-hmm. So Alex is playing a real consultant role, which is what he's
fantastic.
Great at.
It's fantastic to watch. He's like the soup Nazi of consultants. This looked bad. No code for you.
You can tell he's been a consultant for a long time because he'll look at something and say, "This is stupid. Stop it."
That part I kind of enjoy. I kind of enjoy the back and forth. It's quite a drama that's unfolding. So just to wind this up, and by the way, I love that they're doing this. Obviously, it's very important. And anyone who hasn't seen it yet, go to podping.watch and just see everything come through a podcast updating in real time. And know that that's powered by oats.
Oat milk.
What was the server for? Why did we need another server? That's like the Belgian screwdriver. Just hammer it with it. Throw more iron at it.
Well, that's the idea that we'll, one day we may need our own API, Hive API we can be a participant in the system.
I see. Okay.
Which is good.
Probably a good idea. Yeah, that's right.
But you're telling me
that I'm running a part of the world's reserve currency, Bitcoin, on a Raspberry Pi, but Hive needs a $150 a month server?
It needs 4 terabytes of disk space is what it needs.
What?
Yeah, and like 24 cores or some crap like that. Yeah.
No, it's, really?
Oh, yeah, it's a hefty piece of work. So
are you mining Hive while you're participating in the network? Or
I don't know. You may be contributing to
global warming.
You may be contributing to El Salvador's volcanic activity with this thing. I'm not sure.
Holy crap. That's great. All right. Cool. Well, thank you. So I knew what was going on. But everything's working. We're just trying to mitigate that and fortify and make it better and make it bulletproof and understand where it may go in the future.
So Brian said that, I think what he said, if I can understand Brian speak, is that the API server that he was using for posting freaked out in some way. And his algorithm for choosing a backup for failing over was not good. Wow. And so it just stuck. And so I think it's an easy fix. So,
okay.
Famous last word.
Okay.
It's always dangerous to interpret Brian of London and try to communicate his intent to other people. So that's gotta be a caveat here.
He's a beautiful guy. I love the enthusiasm, and he reminds me a lot of young Adam before I gave up and said, I really can't code. I really have no business to do this.
He can code.
He's of course he can code.
He's been out of the game for so long. He's having to catch up.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Now, speaking of such, it is my understanding that we discovered the source of the 502 errors.
Oh, you talking about Eric?
Well, was it a 502 error that was showing up on our API, and that was something that was happening in the background that Eric's working on?
Well, no. Okay, so you're.
I'm conflating two things.
There's two 502s. There's the 502. God, we're off so off in the weeds here. I feel like we're gonna have to play a clip here or something to break this crap up. But 502. On Eric's side for the image server. And so he said that he found that issue and it was something with the way he was handling.
Isn't that typically like a 502 would be returned from Cloudflare? Isn't that where you'd get the 502 from?
Well, any HTTP server can return a 502. Oh, okay. It just means service unavailable for some reason.
Oh, I thought is it service or gateway? I always thought it was gateway. Could be service.
Gateway, something like that. There's probably a reverse proxy on Dreamhost side, so it's probably just
okay.
It's miscommunicating the error back to you. Yeah, yeah. Right. So the origin server's failing for some reason, and it comes through as a 502. On our side, I think I figured out what our issue was, and this is something we can talk about, which is the tracking URL now. So we've had various people like Mitch and John Spurlock and others from time to time want to track what's going on in our database.
Mm-hmm.
So they just want to sit back as a third party and just use us as essentially the aggregator. And they just want to say, okay, let me know when something changes and I'll just follow along with you.
This is the new items feed.
Yeah, yeah. And so there's a whole batch of different endpoints that accomplish this in five different ways.
I can already guess what happened.
Oh, I would like to hear your guess.
Someone like me built an app that checks every 15 seconds. Bleep, 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 bleep,
no.
Bleep.
No? Okay. No. That's a great guess, though. But no. There's a few of these endpoints. And these are great. You're going to love this. There's a recent feeds endpoint, and there's a feeds recent endpoint.
Recent feeds.
Podcast recent.
Okay. So yeah.
Essentially, there's a recent podcast and a podcast recent. So neither, and that's dumb. But anyway, it's just a side effect of how this thing evolved over time. The recent feeds endpoint, it tells you every time a feed updates. The recent episodes endpoint tells you every new episode. These are okay, but there was somebody else, another person that I've been talking to over email that needed sort of all that into one thing, into one block of data.
Uh-huh.
They wanted feeds and episodes all in one blob.
Hmm. Okay.
And so I started working on a new endpoint called recent, and it's recent/data. If you call the recent data endpoint, you get that blob back, and it's got feeds and episodes all in one batch.
Okay.
It's a heavy database call. So because it keys on the items table, which is for where the episodes are stored, it's a heavy call. And so it's hard to do a lot of filtering and that kind of stuff on it. So it's really just a raw call. You just call recent data. You get the full fire hose. And I created the endpoint and rolled it out to Mitch and John, and they were testing it. And it was giving 502 errors about once every so often interval. I don't even know how often. I mean, it was like once every 30 minutes to an hour, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
It was very random. And I could not find any logging that supported that was showing me what was happening initially. And so I think I finally figured out by looking at Cloudflare, the way we have our two front end API servers set up is there's an API one and API two, and they're DNS round robined. And when you do a DNS round robin, the requests tend to be sticky. That means that there will grow up over time an affinity to choose one over the other for certain combinations of calling or of certain combinations of origin of request and the endpoint that they're calling. Hmm. So if I start calling an API that has set up in this way, most load balancing gateways that are most DNS, no, it's not a gateway, most DNS will tend to resolve to the same host based on the same sort of criteria.
Despite there being a random generator in there?
There's not really a random generator. Oh, okay. DNS is more sticky than that.
Okay. Well, of course, because of caching and all that. And yeah, TTL.
If you know how DNS works on the client side, sure. It's very similar to that. So like if you set a primary and a secondary DNS mm-hmm. server on your machine, a lot of people think that it will use the primary until it fails.
You set, well, your priority, if you do 10-10, then it'll choose one or the other, I think, right?
Well, it will use the primary until that one fails. Mm. Then it'll flip over to the secondary, but it won't flip back.
Ah, okay.
Like if the primary comes back online, it's not going to switch back to primary. So DNS tends to be sticky. It sticks with the last successful thing and it never really wants to give it up.
So it was overloading one of the two servers?
It wasn't. No, what was happening was the one of the servers had a bad copy of the code.
Oh man, obscure.
Yeah, I had evidently not there had been I don't know what happened, but one of them had a copy of the code with a typo in it. And so, cause I always upload to both at the same time. One of them had a bad copy of code. And so most of those recent data endpoint calls were all getting served by one of the front ends, mm-hmm. but every now and then it would hit the other one.
And it would fail on that.
And it would fail two or three times in a row and then flip back to the other one. And you wouldn't see the problem again.
Ah, okay. So if it fails a couple times, then eventually the DNS does flip back.
I'm not sure what their algorithm is. I really don't know. Okay. I don't know what it is.
Wow. Okay. All right.
Yeah, it took 4 hours of head scratching to figure that out.
Yeah, I know how much you've seen, but I want everyone to know that Eric is building the whole on-ramp. Mm-hmm. Gene's mom experience. Now in the Urban Dictionary, I'll have you know.
I saw that. Nice.
Once I'm moved, you know, give me a week, turn around. Mm-hmm. You know, then I think Tina and I are going to start writing words the framework that he's built. Yeah, I'm very excited. Yeah, and you can tell that people are like, hey, we need something. The landing page.
I know. That's such a it's necessary.
Yeah, we're getting there. We're getting there.
Eric is the one that sent. I'm sorry. It was Alex Gates sent in the screenshot that OnlyFans has a lightning node now. Yes. I'm like, man, open a channel to that thing quick. We can charge super high routing fees.
I'm gonna make a couple of prediction based on some thoughts, and you might have read this morning. Tanzania is now also considering adopting Bitcoin as a national currency.
About Paraguay? Aren't they in the
Paraguay? Paraguay also on the list.
Okay.
And I'm pretty sure that there will at least be an announcement. Who knows how long it'll take before implementation? I think that Lightning connected through Cash App, so real Satoshi stuff. I think that'll be hooked up to Twitter. I'm pretty sure that's coming. An announcement at least is coming. And when that happens, oh my God, it's going to be so dynamite.
Oh yeah. That'll be so cool.
Everybody will it's just the education. You know, this is, I realize I'm so impatient, but I think was I talking to Dave Jackson or maybe it was Michael Malice. I went on his show too.
I haven't heard that. Has it been posted yet?
Yeah. It's posted.
Oh, okay. I'll go back and listen.
Yeah. He's a good guy. It was, not so much podcasting 2.0. I mean, I kind of just went with his flow.
Yeah.
But I obviously, I'd bring it back. Tom Woods, I did Tom Woods show.
No, I hadn't heard that either. I'm a slacker.
Yeah. And Tom Woods is great because I'm like, hey, can I ask your audience something, Tom? And he's like, sure. Would you please get a new podcast app, newpodcastapps.com?
Nice.
Yeah. So this, so the adoption is, it's, it seems to be happening, and I love hearing, you know, Podland or Pod News, and you know, now I'm hearing James Cridlin talk very casually about podcasting 2.0 features as if, you know, it's like, it's the most normal thing in the world. Mm-hmm. He's, you know, I don't hear the disdain anymore for Bitcoin or feigned, disinterest. He seemed very interested.
I like British. It. They invented feigned disinterest.
Yeah, that is kind of the Brits, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Anyway, what were
hopefully he's boosting us when we talk about him.
That's I boosted him. I drained the bowl this morning.
Here's your cue to boost. You know you want to.
Boost.
Did you just say you drained the bowl?
Yeah. By the way, the OnlyFans lightning note is just called OnlyFans. They missed the perfect opportunity to call it the Spank Bank.
Ah!
Tell me I'm wrong.
Yeah. No. Listen, those guys, they're branding. So I wonder. Yeah, I wonder if they'll integrate that.
I don't know. That's
it. Had some money on it. It had liquidity. I know. I saw that.
It wasn't a lot. Mm. I mean, it was a little. I don't know. It seemed like kind of low for them, but you know, maybe they don't make as much money as I thought.
Well, we now have, I think Marnix or Satoshi Stream posted this morning. We have 250 podcasts now using the value block.
Yeah, that's a lot, man.
That's pretty good. You know, I think we have most of the Bitcoin podcasts covered.
I'm so glad that Breeze put in the new value podcast tab.
Yeah.
Cause that's really helpful. Cause a lot of the ones that are coming on board now are really high quality.
Mm-hmm.
I find myself finding new stuff there.
Oh, every day. Every day I look at the new tab.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Every day. It's fantastic. And it gets to the point where we discussed, I hate listening to Kara Swisher and Scott Galloway Pivot. That's my hate podcast.
You hate Clip It too.
Yeah. But it's important. Yeah. In fact, contrary to what many people think, I actually watch a lot of MSNBC during the day because I just want to see what they're saying. I want to understand. This is the point now where I almost don't want to listen to that podcast because I know I can't boost it. I can't really stream anything to it. I'm lacking interaction, and and it's boring. It's really interesting how the whole idea of fire up the podcast, someone I like, boom, 500 sats just before you've even the intro's over. All right, let's go. And then
I've got my new 2112 rush boost. That's my new one.
2112 rush boost.
Yeah, the 2112 album. You know, Rush.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm not a Rush guy.
You're not?
Oh. No, never was.
Sorry. No. But you know, 2112.
No,
I mean that's like an epic album.
No,
it's one of the greatest prog rock albums ever.
You have to remember that I started my career and grew up in the Netherlands. So when I went to school in West Virginia when I was 19, I guess, 18, mm-hmm. no, 18. That was pretty much my first exposure to Rush. They did nothing in yet. I mean, it was not on the radio. It was the only thing would be Spirit of Radio. Is that the one?
Yeah,
that's the only song that I was familiar with. So. How does this correlate to your boost?
No, that's the name of one of their albums. It's 2112.
That's you boost 2112.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm a baller booster.
You sure are.
But I had to cut it in half though. I went from a you know 1033 to 2112, so I boost half as much.
Yeah. No, I noticed that I like boosting a lot. So I'll boost the show many many times.
Do you want to listen to? Oh, I'm sorry.
No, good. Sure.
Do you want to listen to Mahler's, or did you see this? The Jack Mahler's appearance on Fox Business.
I saw a little bit of it. Yeah,
I clipped it. You want to?
Yeah. Sure. So this is Jack Mahler's of Strike and Zap.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess he was talking about the El Salvador Bitcoin integration, monetization, nationalization deal.
The IMF, the International Monetary Fund, the world, you know, not interested in stepping up to make this happen. you know, you're kind of going at alone without these big organizations that usually step in and help second and third world nations get up to speed.
You know, Liz, I wonder why they're upset. Because from a high level view, you're talking about a country, a sitting president that has to look at 70% of the lives living within his country that don't have financial access, that don't can't live a high quality of life because they don't have a vehicle to save and grow wealth. And all he's doing is plugging into an open, distributed system to give hope to his country, to bring financial inclusion and basic
Jack,
human freedom.
Sorry.
And, no, hold
let
on.
Me inter- Who let would me be interrupt. Upset they about could that? Lose everything. Well, because, there are many stories, legions of them, of people being locked out of their accounts. Or, you know, there was just this situation recently where you had a Bitcoin company in Africa setting up and then absconding with the money. I mean, maybe they're working on the side of protecting these people. Do you see that side?
Oh, this is great. It shows you how little people really understand Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
And this is very interesting. That the main issue she sees is people forgetting their passwords.
That's pretty much it.
And then that doesn't happen to a regular bank account.
Yeah. And the volatility.
Those
are two big things, you know, the price swing and I lost my keys.
Right. Well, but that's exactly what they're doing with that $150 million fund is they're setting that up so that you can accept Bitcoin, Lightning or on chain. And immediately exchange it for equivalent in dollars, and then the government or the central bank, I believe, of El Salvador takes the risk on the volatility.
Yeah, but that. What do you think he said? Like, what do you think his response to her was?
To this,
yeah.
Listen, you.
I mean, what would your response be?
Listen, you globalist news reader. Did he start off like that? Listen, you globalist news model, I might have said.
Oddly enough, he did not say that. No.
Well, he probably laid some smackdown on her that was high level macroeconomics, if I know Mahler's. That's probably what he did in his own, hairless chest, baseball hat wearing way. He's very, very, very charismatic, this young man.
He did not.
Okay.
And that was a little, now I'm not, this is not a criticism of Mahler's because I think I respect the guy a lot. And being in a situation like that, I could tell he was a little nervous. And being in a situation like that when you're not sure what the questions are going to be and they're coming at you quick, I mean, that's not an easy thing.
Well, I like how he parried her here. I mean, that was good. He's like, excuse me, no. And so then it comes back with, let me think what he would say.
Because there are specific things where, you know, people losing their money because they lost their, wallet keys or whatever and the price volatility swing.
Well, so what I always like is, if I can remember 12 words, I have my money anywhere in the world. Yeah. Have you ever done that, by the way? Have you ever restored a wallet with oh my God, it is one of the most sexiest things.
Oh, really?
Yeah, get the blue wallet.
Okay.
And on the blue, so I have my, actually I did it for the podcast index node, I think. That's what I tested. And so you can create a watch wallet, so you can't interact with it, you can't spend from it, but you can see everything that's happening. And, literally took the seed words, put them in, boom, and the wallet pops right up.
I've read the spec on how that works, that in the Mastering Bitcoin book.
Mm-hmm.
I still can't tell you how it works. It's like math magic or something. I mean, somehow using the
there's different systems, right? I think there's different, but they all kind of will. Like blue wallet will eat,
wallet. Isn't that what they call it?
Something like that. Yeah. Blue wallet will eat anything. You can even come close. It's like, I think you're using this system. Is this what you meant? Yeah. Okay. And so I have one wallet, that is for me is like, okay, if I'm anywhere in the world and I need money, these 12 words in this sequence I've memorized, I rehearse them once a month. The first of the month, I rehearse them. I make sure I've got them yes. Oh, yes.
That's cool.
Well, there's many ways to memorize. I once read, actually, I interviewed the guy who wrote he was a journalist. What was his name? He was researching for a book about memory professionals, you know, who compete in contests.
That's not the Mega Memory guy, was it? Who was that guy? The infomercial dude. He's not an infomercial guy, right?
No.
Okay, all right.
And this guy, he got so interested that he not only did he start to learn the techniques, but he went on to win the world championship in memory. And, you know, these guys can tell you the sequence of a whole deck of cards that's been shuffled. Wow. They'll tell you this. And the way they do it is architecture. And so they would buy every architectural magazine, anything that has a house in it. And so it's okay. I have to remember this. I'm in the house. I see in front of me. I see a couch. That is the word dog, because the dog be on the couch. Then I'm going to look to my
association
with architecture. And so you walk through the house in your mind in sequence, and that's where you either you put notes on the door or something, you know, just something that you recognize, and it really works. I can recall things from years ago using that system. But I have to keep it active, you know. Otherwise, you really have to concentrate. Okay, what did the house look like? So anyway, so I've done that, right. and it's beautiful when you do that and you see the wallet come back. It's magic. So to me, that is one of the beauties of Bitcoin is I have my password, my passwords in my head, but it's really to my fortune. You know, there's nothing else I really need to remember but this. On the other
That's
thing,
cool.
What was the second one?
Volatility. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the answer in this particular interview would be that the volatility risk is being taken up by the government, and blow me. That would be my answer.
That's closer to what he said. Not exactly, but it's closer.
Well, let's listen in.
I think it says a lot more about the folks that are against basic human freedom and plugging into an open source system than it is those for fighting for human freedom. The dollar is still legal tender. El Salvador is not going against any pre-existing efforts. It's plugging into a new system where it sees hope and a better future for its citizens. I fundamentally see no issue with that. I think there's a lot of useful problems to solve with Bitcoin. And the problems you're bringing up are to do with a certain company or a certain individual event. Bitcoin is an open, distributed network. There is no central point of failure. There is no central counterpart that can make any decisions on behalf of a government, a president. If the president is to go haywire and lose his mind, the Bitcoin network is going to defend against it and not care one bit. There are no risks in plugging into an open, free, true system and giving his country hope. I see no problem with that, and I have a problem with those that do see a problem with that and are trying to get in the way. I find that morally wrong.
Okay, interesting. And this is, in general, I think this is a good way to market Bitcoin, but they're not doing it right. And this started with...
That was my exact thought.
Yeah, this started with Elon, when he, in essence... kicked the pile and said, okay, tumble down a little bit. You're not environmentally friendly, whatever. And a lot of long-term Bitcoiners were posting, hey, man, do you know that you actually affected people with the reduction in price? You know, people who rely on this, it's their money, and you've basically chopped it down by 10, 15, 20%. While true, no one knows this yet. No one really, it's certainly not in the financial press, has any idea what Jack Mahler's just said there. Understand at all about the freedom of owning your own money, being your own bank, having your own responsibility, and for it not to be able to be seized in any way. They don't understand that, but really this house business, I mean... Mm-hmm. You know, so we have a mortgage where we had money left over. You know, we made some money on the house we sold and we had saved some money. The amount of transfers and waiting, and it's in process, and from bank to bank to escrow to title company. And then and I was like, okay. And Tina and I, you know, the day before we're going to close on the new home, like, okay, I'm going to send this, I'm going to wire this big money here. Here we go. You probably won't see this amount in this account ever again. Here we go. And you cannot wire over $25,000. Like, okay, well, I did have to wire a little bit more than that. Yeah. So, and then we have to go to the bank. We got to get a certified check. I mean, holy crap. Meanwhile, if you just look at memspace.pool, isn't that, or mempool.space, I think it is. Mm-hmm. And you just go look at the transactions that are taking place on chain right now. I'll just read off the numbers as they fly by.
Oh, they're big. They're very big.
Yeah. Well, here's 153,868, 31,450, 40,727. Sometimes I see 14 million flashing by. Yeah, 11,112,000. Now, jeez. Of course, these are, you know, probably going in and out of exchanges. Who knows what those big amounts are for? But the speed, you know, just try and wire any big amount, and then you know, anything small. I actually got my hairdresser. I got her to get Strike.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, gonna pay.
I got my brother-in-law on it because I help him with some. I help him with his computer stuff on the side, and then he just pays me like I run his website and stuff, and so he just pays me like a fee. It's like $30 a month, and he just, you know. And so I told him the other day, I'm like, let's do Strike, and so we got him hooked up.
Oh, cool.
On Strike.
Cool.
Yeah, it's such a great way to onboard people into Lightning without them even realizing they're on it.
Well, for her, it was good because she started doing Venmo because of the credit card fees. You know, she just, you know, she rents a chair every day in a place, you know, it's a typical one-man shop, but renting in a salon. And now Venmo is going to start charging payers and recipients for payments.
Oh, no.
I think so.
You're right. I was thinking, I started to say that I remember that, but I think what I was confusing it with was PayPal increasing their merchant fees.
Well, all of that's happening. It's all happening across the board. And people are starting to notice that. And so I said, well, let's just do Satoshis. And it goes in one for one. I don't know how they make their money. Well, I do, but it's not on your transaction. She's like, let's do it. Okay.
Yeah, that's the way he was. He's like, hey, I like free.
Yeah.
Let's do it. Well, this, you know, you brought up the housing thing. I saw this post from somebody at an Austin newspaper. I don't know which one it is.
The Statesman.
Maybe, I guess it is the Statesman. Audrey McGlinchey. She did an article, and it's the title of the article is Home Prices in Austin Rose 100,000 in Less Than 6 Months. When will the surge end? Oh, I'm sorry. This is the NPR station there, KUT Radio.
Yes.
And so, you know, her quote when she was posting a link to the article was, she says, you know, blah, blah, blah. While this is going on, each day more and more people are being priced out of buying a home, which is now the way we build wealth in this country.
Yep.
And I think that might be a better sort of attack vector for discussing Bitcoin is its protection against inflation. And that seems to be a little more an idea that people can wrap their head around a little bit easier, because everybody understands that if you print more money, you get inflation. That's, everybody knows that. It's just default. We've seen it with, you know, was it Zimbabwe? And we've seen it with Weimar, Germany. We've just seen that it's in, everybody understands this. And so if you have a money that you cannot print more of, then you protect yourself against the damages of inflation. And the damages of inflation to me are where the immorality is. And I guess I would like to see, Mahler's and people focusing more on that side of things, because I think you're right. There's no, when he starts talking about decentralized and decentralization and openness and he just loses everybody.
Yeah. That's interesting. I had these clips yesterday, for No Agenda, and I didn't play them. Huh. It's two clips, which now I did a whole expose on Larry Fink, the CEO of BlackRock.
I've got an article about BlackRock right here.
Yeah, so you know they are moving the needle. They are moving companies through their influence when board seats and you know just tons of. Tons of influence. You know, they have almost $9 trillion under management. This is big money from pension funds, other, you know, just really, really large organization. And they're implementing these ESG standards, which is part of the problem with Bitcoin, as it's been labeled as not, you know, the ESG is environmental, social, corporate governance. And they now have a scoring system as to how, and it literally comes down to, did you use the word green a lot in your marketing, and are you woke? I mean, these two things, it true. And they have a whole SASB and TCFD, which are these nonprofits, which are created with metrics, how you measure that crap, which is completely subjective, or a lot of it's subjective. But then I have two clips. So this is the guy that is pushing us towards new energy forms. They've divested of anything in coal. So it matters what they do. So if you want to know the engine behind Green New Deal, definitely this is part of it. And so this is what he had to say about Bitcoin.
Bitcoin is still a very small market, and it can move in very large increments with small movements of money.
That's interesting point number one. So, of course, for him, a relatively small amount of money, you can really move the price. And that's what your volatility is. Obviously, that's what it is. But here he is, in essence, saying, we know that because he may be doing it or whatever.
And so it's not a market for the calm. I understand the enthusiasm around it. This asset category is so small relative to other asset categories, and the preponderance that is being discussed on Bloomberg and other sources of media tells you that, you know, people are fascinated about it. So I would say business media believes it's going to have a huge future. But let's, you know, bring it down to the investor side. Everyone is focusing on it. It could be another store of wealth. But right now, it's still untested. It has huge volatility of moving in 5% and 6% increments with small dollars investments moving it. And so for anything like that to be truly successful, it's going to have a broadening of the market. And you could invest large sums of money without moving the value to the extent it's doing it. So we're watching it. We're enjoying the conversation. It is my instinct. It may some form of a digitized currency is going to play a bigger role in the future. And it may be a Bitcoin or maybe something else that has developed. But there is a fascination, and that fascination is really fun to watch.
Okay, so now this guy, I know this type of CEO. The things that this type of guy is that is on his radar, he'll always diminish. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, it's fun to watch, a cute little thing over there. But yes, now notice that he said it could actually become a store of wealth. And he says, I know something like it will become a store of wealth. It could be Bitcoin or something else. Bitcoin is the only one he name checked. And the reason that's interesting is what he says in this next clip is from the same interview about store of wealth, which now in Italy and Japan, because of the lack of social services or also culturally, the store of wealth is really the people themselves. They're savers, unlike the United States where, you know, we borrow. So they save a lot of money because when you retire, you either save something or you're going to, you know, you're going to be living in someone's basement. Yeah. So it's talking about a store of wealth.
And so over the course of the next 20 years, you're going to see this aging society starting to spend their savings. That's when the Italian or the Japanese deficits are going to start really having an impact. In the United States, as long as the U.S. dollar is a store of wealth, the exportation of our deficit is not a problem. If there was another store of wealth, if there were multiple stores of wealth, let's say that, and then the exportation of the dollar and the deficits will become a problem. And that's a problem that we're going to have to live with when that time happens.
So yeah, there it is.
I think it's really interesting that he says store of wealth instead of store of value. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That is a glimpse into his own thinking about it.
Yep.
These guys, and that perfectly plays into the Jack Dorsey, Elon Musk, I think the the B word.
Oh yeah.
That whole B word seminar thing. Yep. They're launching this initiative to teach institutions and large companies about the benefits of Bitcoin. My personal thought is, and this fits perfectly with those clips, is that what they're setting up, that I think they've been spooked by the inflationary signals that they have seen, which are stiff. I mean, if
that's what she said,
inflation is beginning to rear its head in a way that has a lot of people scared, and it ought to, because it could be massive.
Well, they're out of ammo. They have nowhere else to go but print.
At the moment. So they have to store them. They have to store their wealth somewhere, or else it'll be inflated away from them.
Yep.
So they are. I think the Silicon Valley tech hedge fund matrix is looking at a alternative store for their wealth where they can stick it and not have to worry about a government taking it away from them through the slow, drip, drip, drip of inflation.
I would say,
which might not be slow anymore.
I would say that they're one step further. They have their wealth in Bitcoin, and now they want to make sure that it increases by bringing more people in. I think these guys have whatever they need locked up or whatever they feel comfortable with.
That's it. They've got their position already.
Sure. Sure.
And then now they need to ratchet up. It's
classic front running.
Yeah.
But I really like that Fink said, well, Bitcoin probably a store of wealth. We'll see. Something like Bitcoin will be a store of wealth. And then he says, if there's another store of wealth, that's going to be a problem for the U.S. dollar. We'll have to deal with that.
Yeah, it is. It will be. Yeah.
And why do we say this? Because it's a part of podcasting 2.0. It's a part of the, I really, truly see this as such. It's the few. I mean, I see it every single day. I need to see how many transactions we're doing this month. But it's cranking along just beautifully. And I see happy stories.
Yeah. I added up my total boosts to Pod News, cause I listen to it daily every morning.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pumping in minimum $17 probably, when Bitcoin goes up $17 to $20 a month on that one show on Pod News.
Yeah. Voluntarily.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. And that I don't want to belabor the point, but I want to say, I've said this before, I think but there's something so magical about catching a listener right at the moment when they're listening and enjoying your content and giving them the ability to hit the boost button at that very moment.
Mm-hmm.
Not a monthly subscription that may hit their credit card when they're leaving work one day and they don't understand that. And they've got no, at that moment, they may not have any connection to your material and to your content. But if you catch them when they're listening and give them the ability to pay you right then, man, you can make a difference in how much income you have.
Oh, unbelievable. And it's a behavior. We're building on a behavior that has already been taught to hundreds of millions of people, which is the concept of like, and I'm tapping something, and I'm enjoying something, hearts, whatever it is. It's,
confetti.
I love the confetti. Everybody's got different confetti. It's so cool. I really love it. Really, really love it. Let me see what
you got. Anything else? Or we're getting long. Do you want
to? Yeah, let's. We need to thank people. Is what we need to do. The value for value. That's what we're always talking about. And we like to thank the people who support Podcasting 2.0, the PodcastIndex.org project, which includes this podcast, the Mastodon, all the work that we put in. The community, the servers, the only way we can ensure a future for now is this. Of course, we always love it.
Boost.
When you boost us, that's also accepted. For your cuck bucks, go to podcastindex.org, scroll down to the bottom, big red donate button, and you can send it to us via PayPal.
Marco Arment comes in, gave us $500 this month.
Thank you, Marco. He's working on the cloud chapters, right?
Yep, he is. Never. I can't notes, wait. No jingle, anything. He just ponied up 500.
I'm going to defragment him.
Go ahead.
You've been defragmented.
It'll make him faster. It makes will. Implementation go smoother.
It will. He line up all those blocks. Who is this? This is... here it is. Lucas Scrobot. And this is interesting. He gave us $100.
Wow. Thank you.
But get a load of this, though. He says, thanks for developing the Freedom Controller. Now a happy user. Podcasting 2.0. Value for value streaming and the RSS. Kind of. Broad and decentralized. Go podcasting. Lucas Scrobot.
Wow.
Go podcasting! So
I gave Lucas some of my time this week to help him get a Freedom Controller set up. That's wow. The first Freedom Controller I set up
in a long time.
3 years. Yeah.
Nice. What's he using it for? For blog post aggregation?
I'm not real sure. He called it show notes. That's the name of the thing. Oh, so I don't know if he's doing a podcast or what. I'm not sure.
Huh.
But anyway, he's fairly technical, and you know, it doesn't matter with the Freedom Controller. It doesn't matter how technical you are. It can defeat you. So, it defeated him, and he needed help.
Well, once the Freedom Controller is running, it's like the trusty old steed.
It never stops.
It really, I'll knock on wood, but in 10 years, maybe 3 times I've had an emergency on a show day, which you were able to fix in seconds.
Yeah, one of those was an EC2 instance
right.
Barfed. Yeah.
And the other one is where I saved an offline version of, you know, some 1,000-page PDF. Yeah. Filled with legislation, which it strips it all out. It strips out everything it can find. So it was just the server like, I'm still calculating, still trying to serve this page.
Yeah. Let's see. Dreb Scott gave us $43. Show note number.
Episode number. Nice. Yeah. Nice one. Thanks, Dreb.
Dreb says go podcasting.
Go podcasting, yes.
Go podcasting!
Dreb is the proud owner of a Podcasting 2.0 certified t-shirt.
Yes. I see many people posting their t-shirts. It's beautiful to watch. I love it.
Yep.
And you know why? It's because I wore it on the Max Kaiser RT show. I mean, that thing read perfect. Yeah. It was great.
Oh, it looked great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With my guns.
your guns. Yeah. Let's see. And Eric's sending out shirts as we... as you can. So
cool.
If you don't have it yet, you should have it. Emery Bryant gave us $33.33. Says, excellent show, guys. I love listening to this show as much as I do the No Agenda show. Wow. That's a big compliment.
Thank you.
The amount of brain power that you two are able to get into one room is amazing. I agree. I wholeheartedly agree with this.
Maybe. I don't know. Brain matter.
Yeah. You make me want to podcast and run my own node. Keep it up, Sir Twin Screw, WB4BSD.
You know, that's such a good... Who was I playing with? That blackhole.run? You ever seen that? It's like a file transfer service.
Ooh, no.
Well, I guess what I was just thinking is, man, I'm looking at that Raspberry Pi and it's running my node. It's running Lightning. I mean, if we had IPFS hooked up, man,
yeah,
it would be so perfect. Here's your podcast box. Just hook it up to your cable. It'll work magically. Money, you know, MP3s go out. It gets distributed somehow. Money comes in Satoshi somehow.
Yeah, the magic box.
Yeah.
In your closet.
That's the one we've been talking about for 20 years.
20 years that'll never happen.
Oh, the new house. The new house. This guy built the house. And he wired it properly. He wired it with mounted TVs. We're not, you know, we don't necessarily like, we're not big in the TVs everywhere, but they happen to be in every room. But he has a server rack, and that's where the cable boxes go. And he's got,
ooh, all, nice.
Yeah, baby.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm going to have some winky blinky lights in there.
You are. Yeah. I mean, you guys like, I'll see how many Raspberry Pis can I fit in that server?
Beautiful,
rack?
Beautiful, with a smoky glass door, the whole thing. Oh, you know, it has its own spot in the house. Like, what's that? Well, that's my rack, baby. Come to my rack.
It's a beautiful rack you have.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Our monthly guys this week, Keith Gibson gave us $50.
Thank you, Keith.
Dwayne Goldie gave us $8. Charles, my dog is freaking out. Charles Current gave us $5. Christopher Reamer, $10. James Sullivan, $10. Jordan Dunville, $10. And Stu Coates, $6.66.
Thank you.
It's our group.
Yeah, thank you to these supporters. Very much appreciated. Thank you for keeping it running. Until the Satoshis sustain us.
Yep.
We'll let you know, by the way. We will let you know. We'll let you know. But I'm very excited. In a couple of weeks, hopefully, then we might be able to show some of the new on-ramp process. In the back end for podcasters, I think, is what Eric's working on now with statistics. I believe, timeline so you can see where the boosts happened.
That's my understanding. I mean, the Satoshis.stream guys,
they have some of that.
Really developed
they did.
TLV good. I mean, it's got lots of stuff in it. And by the way, they said that they are giving us, they're donating 1% of their...
Of the four that when it goes out. Yeah, I know.
Do we know how, because I'd like to credit them on the show with the amount, do we know how to get that info out?
That's a good question. I would presume that, but I can't. I don't know how to do that. I don't have the tools, but I think we can. And maybe we just ask them, could you please tell us how much you think you've sent us? You deserve some t-shirts at least.
True. Yeah.
At least. Yeah. No, I know. That's very, very, that's very cool of them. I like that. Yeah, so
tell us, either what you did or how to get for us to do it on the L&D side, and we can credit.
For sure. For sure. Okay. Yeah. Let me see. What else do we have? Any of these clips you want to take care of?
Let me see what I got here.
We never do all your clips. You have so many clips that you always bring. We never get to them all.
Push them forward. Let's do a couple ISOs.
Okay.
We want to do It's Like Money.
It's Like Money, if you think about it.
This is my favorite, though. 5 Satoshis.
I just caught 5 Satoshis.
Who was that?
That's Dave Jackson.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
I just got 5 Satoshis.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
See, Dave gets it. He's like, it's exciting. Who gives a crap? It's $5, 5 Satoshis. I got something. Yeah. I got something. It worked.
I got 5 of something.
I love that. Okay.
Anything else you got? I mean, I got stuff, but we've been.
Oh, man, we have so much. We went so deep on so many important topics.
I wanted to talk about GUIDs and we didn't even get there, but we can do it next week.
Oh man. Okay. Well, that'll be our tease. GUIDs for next week. GUIDs in your future.
Yeah. That brings them back. teasing that really brings the audience back.
Come back here next Friday for GUIDs. You will not be disappointed. Thanks, Dave. I'll see you next week, man.
All right. See you, man.
Bye, everybody.
You have been listening to Podcasting 2.0. Visit podcastindex.org for more information.
I just got 5 Satoshis.
Go podcasting!